Brooks Blevins is familiar with the Ozarks. He is the Noel Boyd Professor of Ozark Studies at Missouri State University. He's now two-thirds of the way done with a trilogy of books examining the history of the Ozarks. The second volume, A History of the Ozarks, The Conflicted Ozarks, is now available. And he'll discuss the book Saturday afternoon at 2 at the Shiloh Museum of Ozarks History in Springdale. Earlier this month, we reached Brooks Blevins by phone and asked him about writing a history of the Ozarks during the Civil War and Reconstruction. He says the usual way to write a history book of that era is to concentrate solely on the Civil War.
And I think when I first started this, that's what I had in mind, was a more traditional Civil War book. But what I discovered when I got into the research was something that I should have known as a historian anyway, that the Reconstruction period after the Civil War was just as important and in some ways more important than the 4 years of war. And so the actual 4 years of war make up close to half of the book. That's the formula that I ended up with roughly the first paragraph dealing with slavery in the Ozarks and the ramp up to the war, and then the final two chapters dealing with Reconstruction, both political Reconstruction and economic and cultural Reconstruction. So it's a book about the long Civil War era, basically from the 1850s into the 1880s, with the 4 years of war being, you know, right at the center of it.
When we discussed the first, A History of the Ozarks, Volume 1, The Old Ozarks, we spent a few minutes talking about how, you know, difficult it can be to define the Ozarks as one place. And as we get to the ramp up of the Civil War and go into the Civil War, that's exacerbated, that Ozarks from county to county is different, as opposed to some counties had as many as 15% of the population slaves. Some counties didn't have any. Some were prosperous. Some weren't. You run into that old sort of dilemma again. Is this the Ozarks or is this the Ozarks?
Yeah, this I know from of the three volumes of this trilogy, this is definitely the most difficult to write from the standpoint of defining the Ozarks and finding a unified way to tell this story, because you have in the Civil War era, you've got Missouri, which ends up on the Union side, you've got Arkansas, which ends up on the Confederate side, and then you've got the Ozarks of the Indian Territory, which is just as big a mess and just as dangerous a place as you found in Missouri or Arkansas. And so you've got those conflicting stories going on that I have to find a way to tell in a way that kind of ties them all together. And then, as you mentioned, even within these states, you've got county by county sometimes is a very different story. And the first chapter that deals with slavery is a good example of that. And that's where you have, as I say in the book, you have places in the Ozarks that are slave societies, and you've got places that are societies with slaves, borrowing the Ivor-Berlin dichotomy of the slave South, because you've got places like Washington County, Arkansas, where more than 10% of the population is enslaved at the time of the Civil War, and certainly slavery plays a really important part of the economy there. On the other extreme, you've got a place like Douglas County, Missouri, in the south central part of the state, which had not a single enslaved person in 1860, not a single slave owner in the population in 1860. It was the largest population of any county anywhere in the slave states that did not have a single slave. So you have really this split society in the Ozarks, from places where slavery was almost non-existent to places like Washington County, Arkansas, Greene County, Missouri, where slavery, though not quite on the level of the Deep South, South Arkansas, Mississippi, places like that, is still very important. It's culturally and economically important. And so that's that can be a tricky story to tell. The one thing that holds them all together pretty much, though, is Certainly, racism was not absent from those places where slavery was not very common. And you still had very, you know, what we might call Southern attitudes in a lot of those counties where there were very, very few slaves on the eve of the Civil War.
And you see that that difficult to define nature continue through the war. And I know it was a divided country, but it seems at times in the Ozarks, it was as divided as almost anywhere in the nation.
Yeah, this I do not claim to be an out-and-out scholar of the Civil War era, though I have read a great deal, especially getting ready to do this book. But I think it would be a real challenge to find a place anywhere in North America that was more divided, that was more of a dangerous no man's land during the Civil War than the Ozarks. You've got what amounts to, at least for 4 years, an international boundary running right through the heart of the region, the line between Arkansas and Missouri. You've got the Cherokee Ozarks of Indian Territory thrown in for this kind of third act during all this. You've got just a tremendous amount of animosity that arises from the fact that it was such a deeply divided region all the way from the days when the debate over slavery starts ramping up toward the war, the secession crisis, the early part of the war. It really is a place that the old neighbor versus neighbor, brother versus brother thing comes into play in the Ozarks. And it was just kind of the perfect storm to make a place that wasn't safe for anybody. And certainly by the last couple of years, the best thing to do, if you could at all, was just to leave the region. And many people, in fact, did that. And large swaths of the Ozarks were mostly depopulated by the end of the war.
You write there's a chapter, The Savagery of War, and there are many accounts in this book of battles from Wilson's Creek. But the details of a family in Prairie Grove who watched their house burn. There's an account from a girl who at the time of this was 9. And houses were burned. Library books at the Cane Hill University were burned. Cattle, hogs killed and eaten for meat by, I think in that case, federal soldiers, but certainly both sides, entire crops wiped out. You write that it just becomes a matter of basic survival for the people in many parts of the Ozarks that were caught in the middle of the battles.
It really is just a fight for survival throughout the war, but certainly those last couple of years of war. And one of the, I think, most moving accounts that I came across, and this is another Washington County account, the Herman sisters-in-law, who are German immigrants who live at what today is Dutch Mills in the western part of the county. And their diaries just record how immediate the war was, how dangerous it was, how people on the home front, in this case, women with small children, whose husbands have gone away, are just trying to survive however they can. They don't know who they can trust, who they can't trust, and it's not just because they're immigrants. This goes for everybody. But in their case, anytime uniformed men came to the house, it was not a good thing. They were going to take things. They demanded that the sisters-in-law cook dinner for them. They, pretty much just ran roughshod over the house and did whatever they wanted to do. And it was just, kind of a microcosm of what went on across the Ozarks as the people on the home front had to deal with this lawless situation. You think about in a place like the Ozarks, civil law breaks down very early in the war, and you don't have working sheriff's offices and things like that. You've got martial law whenever there's an army large enough in your area to carry out martial law. And when there's not, there's this vacuum that's filled by bad people, guerrillas and desperados of various kinds, robbers, and it just becomes an almost untenable situation. The Herman sisters-in-law eventually leave. One of them tragically dies not long after making it to the safety of family members in Missouri. But it's just something that you see over and over and over and over in this story, just how tragic this was, how divided the place was, how dangerous it was for anyone who was out there.
You mentioned guerrillas, and although not technically guerrillas, because I think those have to be civilian attackers, but Quantrill's raiders had guerrilla-like sort of tactics. I think they didn't follow any sort of military law. They were somewhat infamous in Kansas, not somewhat as known in the Ozarks for a bit. Who were Quantrill's raiders?
Yeah, Quantrill was he was actually from the Midwest and had made his way to Kansas as part of the whole border war, bleeding Kansas saga that went on before the Civil War, and had become radicalized on the southern side. And I think most biographers and most historians who've dealt with Quantrill just basically decide that he's just a bad seed. He's just a bad human being who unfortunately ends up at the head of this group of partisan rangers. In 1862, the Confederate Congress passes a law that basically gives the official stamp of approval to these so-called partisan rangers whose purpose is to harass the Union Army and to help the Confederate cause thereby. And he ends up in charge of one of these groups, and eventually Bloody Bill Anderson and Cole Younger and the James brothers and a lot of these famous wartime and post-war desperados end up under his influence. And a lot of these groups, like Quantrill's raiders, were mostly just out for themselves. They may be at times carrying out what could be called Confederate war aims, but more often than not, they use their positions to just take advantage of vulnerable people and to carry out, you know, egregious acts on other human beings. And again, it's unfortunately, Quantrill's raiders weren't the only ones doing that in the Ozarks. The place was full of people doing things like that on both sides of the fight, which again made it just a terribly dangerous no man's land and a place that no one wanted to be.
I'm speaking with Brooks Blevins, author of A History of the Ozarks, Volume 2, The Conflicted Ozarks, the second of a trilogy of Ozark history books. As difficult as it is to pinpoint what is, you know, sort of the epitome of Ozark or Ozarkness at this time, you do introduce us in your introduction to someone who has deep Fayetteville connections, and I've heard his name pronounced both ways by different people, but Elias C. Boudinot or Boudinot. Why did you kind of put him in the introduction as sort of this emblematic Ozark figure?
Yeah, but I'll call him Boudinot, and I'm not sure either how his name is pronounced. He spent a lot of time in the Ozarks, and I'm suspecting that people put that T on the end. But Boudinot was a mixed-race Cherokee man who had been part of the family that willingly signed the treaty that eventually led to the Trail of Tears. His family were the people, the treaty party, who left before the actual Trail of Tears, and grew up in relative prosperity as a member of one of the, you know, the more important, more prosperous Cherokee families, and spent a lot of time in Northwest Arkansas as a young man, and eventually becomes a diehard Confederate, and even has an impact after the Civil War. And I'd spent a lot of time trying to find the a perfect story, a perfect anecdote, a perfect life to introduce this conflicted Ozarks era that extends from the 1850s into the 1880s. And I finally decided that no one was really better than him, even though as a Cherokee, he doesn't fit our image of what an Ozarker is. I think you could certainly argue that he was, and the fact that he checked all the boxes of the pre-Civil War era, the fact that he was a Confederate during the Civil War, that he did become a champion of the New South philosophy, trying to bring industrialization and modernization and education and all that kind of stuff to Northwest Arkansas and to the Indian Territory after the Civil War. He just seemed a really good fit to introduce this book, and the fact that he, in his own, you know, in his own being, represents that conflict between that conflict of identity between the Cherokee world that he comes from, but has been, you know, he's sort of dismissed by a lot of the Cherokees because of his family's story, and the white world that he spends so much of his life circulating in, that I have to believe, you know, he was never completely comfortable in as well. He just seemed like a conflicted person who carried this story of the conflicted Ozarks in so many ways, and a person that I think more people should know about. So it was fun, you know, to introduce the book with someone that might surprise most readers.
Brooks Blevins is the author of A History of the Ozarks, Volume 2, The Conflicted Ozarks, and he'll discuss the book at Shiloh Museum of Ozark History Saturday afternoon at 2. He is the Noel Boyd Professor of Ozark Studies at Missouri State University.